clotted cream, despite what I think is a terrible name, is one of the most delicious foods that I can possibly think of. It also has some really cool origin stories, from the ancient Phoenicians to pixies trying to outdo a witch's curse. I'm not really worried about a witch's curse at the moment, but I am going to still make some clotted cream from scratch using a recipe from 1670. So thank you to Trade Coffee for sponsoring this video as we clot some cream, this time on Tasting History. So if you've ever had tea in the UK, there's a good likelihood that you've also had clotted cream. But what exactly is clotted cream? Well, essentially, it is the cream of the cream. You take full-fat milk and wait for the cream to rise to the top, and then you put it at a low heat, and the cream of the cream rises to the top of that. And that is the clotted cream. Think of like butter, but richer and nuttier and even more delicious. And to make mine, I am using a recipe from 1670 from Hannah Woolley's The Queen-Like Closet. This is back before it was even called clotted cream, because technically this is a recipe to make clouted cream. Take milk that was milked in the morning and scald it at noon. It must have a reasonable fire under it, but not too rash. And when it is scalding hot that you can see little pimples begin to rise, take away the greatest part of the fire, then let it stand and harden a little while, then take it off and let it stand until the next day, covered, then take it off with a skimmer. One thing that I love about this cookbook is that you can see very clearly how far cookbooks have come in the last 350 years or so. First off, this recipe appears right below another recipe to get away the signs of the smallpox, something I assure you will not be found in any of Ina Garten's cookbooks. I also don't think that any recipe written today would ever use the phrase, "You see little pimples begin to rise." Now, I am going to follow Ms. Woolley's recipe as closely as I can, and I say that because I do not have access to the ingredient that she calls for, which is the full-fat cow milk that is squeezed in the morning, because I don't have a cow. Though a lot of old recipes actually call for it to be squeezed at night, because there's often more fat in the milk that is squeezed at night, which I think is very interesting. Either way, I don't have a cow, and despite what Meet the Parents would lead me to believe, Cersei was not about to be milked.
I had no idea you could milk a cat.
So no fresh milk for me. And you can't really use the milk that you would get at the store, at least not here in the US, because that milk has usually been homogenized, and so it makes it so the cream won't separate, so this whole thing won't work. So I am going to start a little bit later into the recipe when the cream has already been separated. So I'm going to get some pasteurized cream. So in England, they pasteurize their cream. So if you're in England, just get some cream, you're good to go. But here in the US, we typically ultra-pasteurize the cream, which means it's been brought to a higher temperature, and you can't use that for this. Or at least, you're going to get very little clotted cream for the amount of cream that you need. So try to find just pasteurized cream. I know that they sell it at Sprouts, that's where I got it, and some other kind of stores in that range. Usually it's in a really nice bottle, often glass, and usually costs about three times as much as the regular cream, but that's the stuff that you need. But that is all that you need, because the only ingredient for clotted cream is 1 quart or 1 liter of cream. Now, the best time to start this recipe is early in the morning, because it has to sit in the oven for about 12 hours. So first thing in the morning, pour your cream into a dish of some sort. A 9x9 baking dish works, but I'm using two smaller dishes. It doesn't really matter though. What's important is that it is about 1 to 1.5 inches thick when you put it into the oven at 175 degrees Fahrenheit or 80 degrees Celsius. Then once your cream is in the oven, you've got 12 hours to kill. So sit back, relax, and make yourself a cup of coffee from today's sponsor, Trade. Trade is a coffee subscription service that delivers coffee to your door, being delivered within 48 hours of roasting from one of the dozens of locally owned coffee roasters that Trade works with. And a great way to try out new coffees while still staying in your flavor preference wheelhouse is with Trade's new subscription, where you just decide the style of coffee that you want, like dark roast or light roast, decaf, espresso, the list goes on. And then Trade will hook you up with a collection of coffees that fit your taste. Like, I wanted to try some of Trade's single origin coffees, and they sent me this bag of Carrier Wave High Wire, which, while new to me, fits my love of creamy, chocolatey coffees without too much acidity. So to get started with Trade and transform the way that you experience coffee at home, visit my link, drinktrade.com/maxmiller, and right now, when you subscribe, you will get your first bag of coffee for free. And they guarantee that you will love that first bag, or they will replace it for free. That's drinktrade.com/maxmiller to get your first bag of coffee for free when you subscribe. And once you've got your coffee, you've still got about 11 hours to kill. So go do some chores, you know, do that laundry that you've been putting off for a while. That's actually what I did. And just sit around until your clotted cream's ready. After a few hours, the cream will have developed a sort of yellow skin on top and it'll start to smell really, really good, but it is far from done. The bottom still hasn't done what it needs to do. So leave it in there for the full 12 hours until the top looks a bit dimpled and has folds in it. That's when it's done. At this point, you can take it out and leave it to cool to room temperature, and be very careful as you move it because there is still liquid on the bottom. Then, once it's at room temperature, you can put it in your dairy. But if you don't have a dairy at home, then you can just put it in the fridge. You should cover it. I forgot for the first hour, but I remembered and covered it. Cover it, put it in the fridge, and leave it there for another 12 hours until it has fully cooled. At this point, the top should be nice and firm, and right underneath is a super creamy layer of cream. Below that will be a pool of essentially bland skim milk. You don't want that, at least not in your clotted cream, so kind of break away the cream from the edge of the dish and then pour that milk into another dish. And you can either toss it or save it to make some scones, which we will do in a bit. But for now, you've got your clotted cream, but there are a couple ways to eat it. Today, modern day, now, we would just eat it as is, clotted cream. So you would just take the cream out with the crust and put it into a dish. Sometimes they mix the crust in to make it more like a whipped butter style thing. But often in England, they just leave that crust. And frankly, that's where a lot of the flavor is. So just make sure you don't get rid of it. The other option you have is to eat your clotted cream in the old-fashioned way. Like, I looked at this 1755 cookbook called A New and Easy Method of Cookery by Elizabeth Cleland. And she says that once the clotted cream is ready, if you please, beat part of it with a little rose water, and a layer of it, and a layer of unbeaten clouts with sugar between. So to do that, add about a quarter teaspoon of rose water to about a quarter cup of the cream and mix it up, and then have that layer at the bottom of a dish, sprinkle a bit of sugar on top, and put another layer of unbeaten cream on top of that. Now, at the time of these recipes, this clotted cream would have just been eaten with some fruit, maybe some plain bread, but today it's usually eaten with scones, or scones. And so I'm going to make some scones using an early 20th century recipe, but first, I want to remind you to sign up for the Tasting History newsletter by visiting tastinghistory.com, and I want to tell you a bit more about the origins of clotted cream. So let's start with that name, clotted cream. I'm sorry, it's just not appetizing. But where does it come from? You might think that it comes from the word clot, like a blood clot, which is what I think of, which is why it's not very appetizing. And there is a possibility of that because it does kind of coagulate and clot. But that term, clotted cream, didn't come around until around 1799. Before then, it was known as clouted cream under many, many different spellings, and clout would actually refer to a small piece of cloth, hence the old Scottish phrase, ne'er cast a clout till May is out. I apologize to my Scottish friends for having to hear that. Anyway, that phrase means don't cast off your winter clothes until the end of May because their weather is tricky and usually has a cold snap, just as you think summer is coming. The theory behind this is that the clouted cream, that the top kind of looked like a cloth, had been laid over it with the folds and everything, and it kind of does. It looks like a old yellowed rag. Again, not terribly appetizing, but I promise you it's so, so good. Anyway, nobody really knows. The etymological origins are definitely disputed, as are, frankly, the general origins of clotted cream. There's a thought that it actually originated in the Middle East, and there is a dish still made in parts of the Middle East today that is very, very similar. Like in Turkey, it's called kaymak. And one of the oldest theories on how it got to England was actually via one of these ancient Middle Eastern dishes, specifically from the Phoenicians. In 1865, the American diplomat Elihu Burritt visited the UK and wrote of clotted cream in his book A Walk from London to Land's End and Back. And he says some antiquaries affirm that the Phoenicians introduced it when they came to Cornwall for tin. And quote the authority of modern travelers who say that the same kind of clotted cream is now very common in Syria. And should you quickly Google it, that is the story that Google will provide for how clotted cream got to England. But when I hear phrases like some antiquaries affirm, my spidey sense goes off. So I did some digging, and most modern historians agree that the Phoenicians never even made it to Cornwall. And if they did, they definitely didn't say, hey, and we're bringing this cream. They didn't write any of that stuff down. So where did this story come from? It was just made up. The first time that anything like this is even mentioned about the Phoenicians is like the 17th century when they just loved making up history. There's another origin story, which I actually prefer, which is absolutely made up, and the person who writes it down admits that it's made up, but it's a lot of fun, and it's about Cornish pixies or Devon fairies, either one, making clotted cream to stave off a witch's curse. In his work, My Devonshire Book, the late 19th century author J. Henry Harris wrote that two fairies, a prince and a princess, were going to get married, but their local witch didn't want this wedding to go down because she wanted the princess to marry her son. The way that she decided to stop this wedding was by breathing on cream, and that is because, as everyone knows, when a prince and princess fairy get married, part of the ritual is that the princess takes a bath in milk and then is anointed with cream. Everybody knows that, right? So if that can't go down, then they can't get married. So once they gathered up the cream, the witch breathed on the cream and it turned sour. So they gathered some more. The witch breathed again. Again, sour. This happened three times until finally the prince had it in mind to heat the cream up. And when he did so over a long period of time, it became clotted cream. The witch breathed on it. She couldn't get it to spoil because clotted cream lasts a bit longer than cream, I guess. And so they got married. So that's the origin that I like of how clotted cream came to be. And regardless of the origin, the author does talk a bit more about clotted cream in the more modern day, the modern day being like 150 years ago, and he has good things to say. He says, I have never heard anyone say a word against clotted cream, but I have heard it is good for consumption, better indeed than cod liver oil, and in nation's sight more tasty. If you want a cream diet and fresh air, go on the moors where there's a good milker or two. And then if you don't get fat and color, there's not much hope. And he's quite right that nobody has a bad word to say about clotted cream because it is a beloved ingredient all over Britain. As far back as the 16th century, the famous physician Andrew Board said clouted cream and new cream put together is eaten more for a sensual appetite than for any good nourishment. And he's not wrong. Most old recipes use clotted cream either in desserts or kind of other sweet dishes or to thicken things and never as a health food, and that is perfectly okay. That's just not what it's for. In fact, in the cookbook that we are using today, Hannah Woolley talks about at a feast when you serve clotted cream, and it's after all of the more nourishing dishes have gone away. At a feast, you may present these things following. So soon as the meat is quite taken away, have in readiness your cream cheeses of several sorts and of several of colors upon a salver. Then some fresh cheese with wine and sugar, another dish of clouted cream, and another with cabbage cream of several colors like a cabbage, then all sorts of fruits in season. Now Hannah Woolley was writing in London, and that other cookbook that I mentioned from the 18th century with the rose water and the sugar that we're making, that was written in Scotland. So it's clear that, at least by the 18th century, clotted cream was all over the British Isles. But really the best, and many of the books say this, the best was that being made in Devon and Cornwall. And Devon and Cornwall have always been fighting about who made it best and who made it first. And just as Cornwall and Devon dispute the origin of clotted cream, so too do they still argue today over the best way to serve it. Both are done on scones with strawberry jam or some other jam. But in Cornwall, it goes scone, jam, cream, and in Devon, it is scone, cream, jam. Now, Queen Elizabeth II would do the Cornwall way, and Mary Berry, who I really respect, said that Either way works, and it just depends on where you are. Are you in Devon or Cornwall? Well, I am in neither, but since the first time that I had it was in Devon, I go with the Devonshire method of scone, cream, jam. But first, I need to make those scones. So for this, I am looking at the 1915 cookbook Potluck by May Byron. She actually has 9 recipes for scones in this cookbook, and they are all a little bit different, but they're all really, really, really close to being the same. So I wondered why she put them all in there, and then I noticed that the subtitle of the book was over 1,000 recipes from old family manuscript books. So clearly, she was just trying to get to that 1,000 number and filling space. Anyway, for this recipe, what you'll need is 4 cups or 480 grams of flour, 3 tablespoons or 45 grams of cold butter, 1/3 cup or 70 grams of sugar, 5 teaspoons of baking powder, 2 eggs, and 1 cup or 235 milliliters of whole milk, or a cup of that drained skim milk that we got from making the clotted cream. Either one works. So first, rub the butter into the flour until it's all incorporated, and then add the sugar and the baking powder and mix it together. Then add the 2 eggs and gently mix them in, and then about 3/4 of the milk and mix it all in. And it helps to do this by hand because you do not want to overwork the flour. And you're looking for a dough that comes together but is still nice and soft, even a little bit sticky, so you might not need all of the milk, but if it is too dry, just add more of that milk. Then once you do get a nice soft dough, turn it out onto a very well floured surface, then start to fold the dough over onto itself and work it just enough to have it come together. Do not knead this as you would a bread dough, or you will have a tough scone. Really, all you're doing is just making sure that all of the ingredients are incorporated. And then form it into a sort of ball, flatten it down, and making sure there's still plenty of flour, lightly roll it out from the center up and the center down, turning it so it doesn't stick to the counter. Give it a couple rolls until it's about 1 inch thick. And here is where most of her recipes do differ, and it's in the shape. Sometimes she says that you cut them into diamonds or triangles. Another recipe says that they should be round. Her Scotch scones just say they should be scone-shaped, whatever that is. So I'm going with round because that's what I'm doing. So flour your scone cutter and press down on the dough, but don't twist. I've made that mistake in the past. When you twist it, it seals the dough, and so they don't rise as much. So just press down and pull it up and take that scone and put it onto a lined baking sheet. Then let them sit for about 10 minutes, then take another egg and whisk it up and brush an egg wash on the top, trying not to let it drip down the sides. Set that tray in the oven at 425 degrees Fahrenheit, 220 Celsius, for 15 to 20 minutes, and then set them on a wire rack to cool and serve with your clotted cream and some strawberry jam. And here we are, a Devon-style cream tea. If you made the tea, of course. I actually didn't. I'm just having the scone and the clotted cream and the jam. But here we go. Also, I just want to try the clotted cream, the plain clotted cream first, because why not? Let me get some of that crust. So the crust is really where a lot of the flavor is going to be, so. I love it so much. It really is like, it's butter. It's like butter, but just so much richer and has this nuttiness to it and is just darker and it's so good. Let me try this. There's really nothing better. I'm going to finish this, but first I want to try the one that I made with the rose water and the sugar. So again, you want to get some of the crust. You want to get a little bit of everything in there. And don't skimp, baby. Spread it on. Sometimes they like mix the crust in there, but the crust is nice. Here we go. You don't need the jam with that. Rose water is a flavor that has gone out of fashion. I still like it. You don't want too much because it can become overpowering and taste like perfume. But that's absolutely delightful. This really makes you feel a bit like that that fairy princess. It's so much lighter than with the jam, because there is sugar in there, but it's not as sweet. I love both. I'm going to eat them all. I'm going to eat all of this. Now, it only stays good for a few days, like 4 or 5 days in the refrigerator, but it freezes really well. So you can actually freeze some of it and just kind of let it thaw out whenever you want some clotted cream. Make some of this, or just buy some if you don't want to take the time or you can't find the right kind of cream. You can get it online. I'll put a link in the description to where I've purchased it before. It's absolutely delicious, and I will see you next time on Tasting History.